Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research, episode 117. We want to start this episode thanking our 14 strong supporters who have given us generous Patreon subscription monies. We don't do this for money, but we'll never make money from it, really. We understand how niche we are, but your enthusiasm has been incredible over the years in every regard, and people that want to just pay us to not get even right now get bonus content is amazing. I'm sitting here with Hunter Ginn.
Hello.
We are in Savannah.
We are in my house.
You have not only a beautiful place, but the most amazing view. We watched a thunderstorm symphony the other day, just right before our eyes, as if the heavens were creating this thing for us.
Might have another one tonight.
I hope so. It was amazing.
Looks like it.
If not, we'll do some British alt rock thunder. Bring the thunder.
We will curse the skies.
I love doing this with you. I wish we did this in person more often, man.
So do I.
Let's get back to the 14 strong Patreon supporters, man. We really appreciate you all. Vinny DiMaggio, Eric Lynch, Kyle Lind, Forrest Pitts, Paul Stolp, Alan Colson, Ronnie Sanders, Tad Spencer, Marco LG, Chris Warunke, Rob No, Vicky Anderson, Philip Trummer, and Fergo, and I hope it's okay if I say AKA Mike Ferguson. Thank you. We're really inspired to ramp it up by your support. We're going to do a lot of 0.5s because we find them really fun. They're easy to get out to you. And we're going to do some exclusive and fun and weird shit for Patreon subscribers eventually. I think that's very doable in our site. So if 14 people love us out there, and certainly there are others, we know there are others, go to the show notes for a link, which is patreon.com/radicalresearchpodcast. It's easy. Last thing, I want to also thank ZD, that's the letters Z and D, a guy from Belgium who wrote to us and contributed via our PayPal account. It's the old school way you can give to us. You'll find that in the show notes as well for a link. He described himself as a fellow Norwegophile from Belgium. And sir, you made our day with that wonderful email and your recommendations. ZD is also in a band called LVTHN, a black metal band who I believe Mr. Jeff Whitehead's Leviathan has sometimes gone as LVTHN, and ZD told me that he and Rest had talked at some point. It's all good. Don't you like Perfect. That?
Yeah, I do.
Happy endings and in international black metal relations.
I love that. Everybody's getting along.
Everybody's getting along. I'm going to kind of leave it to you to open up the intrigue conversation this time around.
Yeah, we're moving into the mid-80s.
Yes, we indeed here, we are.
Yeah.
Because this thing goes from what? Is it 79 to 89? Is that the advertised span? Yes.
Yeah. So we're moving along.
We are moving along.
And I don't know about you, but I was less familiar with some of these bands than I have been with the others. I am familiar with some of them.
Yeah.
But this one was a little bit out of my wheelhouse.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. You get to the end of it, it's way in your wheelhouse to the point that I did the snippets eventually, but like you probably should have.
Okay.
But I think you'll agree with we have David Sylvian and Scott Walker.
Sure, sure.
What is more Hunter Ginn than those two?
Nothing.
Guys? I know.
Nothing.
Pretty much nothing. Other than nothing. Steve Gadd and
yeah,
the Odd Cinderella album.
And James Taylor.
And James, well, apparently. Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
I think your perspective though is interesting because you would normally be way more familiar with all of these because you're more, you know, this is an area that we came into CD1 episode talking about how this is kind of a new thing for me. I think out of the 50 some artists, I had familiarity with 14,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's, I'm kind of yep. lower on the ratio, and you've been very familiar and very interesting to do these episodes with because of your familiarity. CD3, I didn't feel was any more or less for me. Unfamiliar, you know what I mean? Because right. I've been unfamiliar with a lot of it. Did turn me on to one massive discovery that I have actually since turned you on to, Dolly's Car.
Mm.
Let's dive into it. If you're unfamiliar, we recommend you go and listen to the first two episodes in this series. But this is Intrigue. Stephen Wilson presents Progressive Sounds in UK Alternative Music, 1979 to 1989. That's the title of what we're covering. We're going to start, and my first run through Intrigue, when I got really intrigued with the comp itself. I threw on CD3 for the first time and listened to this. I'm not even going to tell you who it is, and we're going to listen because I think you're unfamiliar, Hunter, and we'll take it up from there.
Dance, 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 dance.
So there you go. That is 12th Night, who are a band, to my knowledge, for so many years were in that neo-prog area with like Marillion and IQ, Palace, that kind of stuff. Stuff that I want to like and looks awesome on paper.
Yeah.
I've just never connected to. I really have desperately wanted to. I just don't. And I
no,
can't.
I have no feeling so for that song.
So they kind of come from that, 12th Night does, but they also come from this other area. And I don't like that song.
No.
But it's similar to like something like ABC's Lexicon of Love, but that's way better. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's sort of, it's as British as this is.
Very British.
This is very British.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Inescapably British.
I don't know what to say other than, I guess they're true misfits because they never really fit in the prog world or any other hipster world. It's just, they never could find traction, and their discography is weird and interesting to look at, but any reason why Stephen Wilson would look at that and pick it?
No idea. Actually,
this one we know. We'll move on to some things we'd like.
Think about all the more interesting things that he could have picked.
Yeah, it's easy to nitpick a comp like this, right? Because there's always stuff. And I think at the end of CD4 sure. episode, we're going to run through a few sure. that I have in mind that should have been on yeah. here. I'm yeah. sure you have yours.
I do.
Let's move on. This is one that I was very familiar with. I love Thomas Dolby's first album, The Golden Age of Wireless from 82. His second album is pretty good, The Flat Earth. But I was happy to see this on here. Is this an album that you got into through me? Or
yep.
You do know it?
Yeah.
And did you
through, get through you?
Okay. Because it was about a 10-year ago discovery for me.
Well, it was 10 years ago that I got into it.
Well, there. Oh, wow. That's okay.
I came and visited you in 2014.
Oh yeah, we listened to this in Sourwood. Yep, I think
we did.
Okay, yeah, Golden Age of Wireless is great. A lot of great songs. I would have put One of Our Submarines on here. I would have put Weightless on here. I even love the hugely popular She Blinded Me with Science. Ooh,
me too. I love that.
Yeah. Album's best in its entirety. To me, it's kind of he's heir to like Brian Eno in late 70s, early 80s Bowie. Mm. This is Thomas Dolby's Airwaves.
Electric fences. Line our new freeway. Here in the half light, the motorhomes live here. Knee deep in water, under a pylon. How slow my heart beat, how thin the air I'm breathing. Wait for morning. No, it was nothing. Some car backfiring. don't ask questions. I itch all over, let me sleep.
We enjoyed the fuck out of that together, brother. That's why we do this.
Yes.
That felt really good.
Oh my God.
We really were vibing Imagine. On that hard.
Imagine.
Love it even more now. And man, it's really prog.
It's total prog.
You know, like.
No, I got like Gabriel era Genesis vibes on that. Like, you know, the spoken word kind of things.
Yeah. Even though that was released in 82, if you had come to me and said, oh, I got this like really obscure British prog band that you've never heard, and they're the fucking, you know, one of those hidden bands that is like the absolute shit. And you played that song for me, or probably anything on that album, really, I believe it. But no, it's Thomas Dolby from 82.
82.
Well, that certainly takes care of Twelfth Night, doesn't it? I mean.
Yeah, Twelfth Night, get the fuck out of here. You've been wrecking with Twelfth Night. Where's Night Area?
They're wishing they were Twelfth Night. That's how bad they are.
What a ridiculous band name, too.
Night Area?
Night Area.
I know. Crispy Ambulance. Now, I just like to say Crispy Ambulance.
Crispy Ambulance. Crispy Ambulance. Crispy Ambulance. Dude, it's very satisfying to say, isn't it?
I like the way you're putting your, like, you got a little ambulance. Whispery Southern thing going on in that one.
Crisp Ambulance. Crisp. Yeah. 911.
You said,
can you look, I need it. We got an emergency here. We need Crisp Ambulance.
Can you send a Crisp Ambulance right away?
A normal ambulance ain't going to do. We need a Crisp Ambulance. Crisp Ambulance.
I thought it was like a fried seafood that you serve down here.
That's a very satisfying title.
Yeah, Crispy. Yeah. So
Crispy Ambulance.
Whatever the name was, this
God damn.
Was this one you were familiar with?
No.
No, so
no familiar.
Had you even heard the name?
Never.
Interesting. Never. Wow.
No, I'm telling you.
And you'd never forget that.
This one is this side of the column is the one with which I have the least familiarity.
Right. Okay, so this is interesting. This album from 82 is called The Plateau Phase, and the song we're going to play is a thing called Are You Ready? Now, I checked out Are You Ready? I've listened to a few times because I know this comp fairly well. Mm-hmm. And then I checked out maybe three songs on Tidal a few days ago from the album. Mm-hmm. And I'm having trouble getting my head around it, but I know that I should revisit.
Okay.
And I'm like, It's unlike anything I know. Let's see what you think of Are You Ready?
Okay.
It doesn't start well, that snippet. It's okay. It's kind of this unintentionally noisy sound almost, you know, like the little shambling, maybe.
Yeah, it sounds sort of incidental, you know, like just casual.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's
yeah.
an indifference to it.
And then, right.
But then, then.
Right.
And
we were
then,
rocking out
yeah.
out here, boy.
Yeah. Boy, let me tell you something. We were rocking the hell out.
Eating turnips and all. But yeah, I mean, so here, this won't surprise you because that one part where we started rocking and how they kind of work on that and expand it is just so great. So there's a lot more to listen to there. And I think both of us will probably be checking out more Crispy Ambulance. But I wanted to read everybody something from the booklet of Intrigue, which is a beautiful, beautiful booklet. It's penned by this guy named James Nice. But singer Alan Hemsall from Crispy Ambulance says this. This is a quote. "We formed in 1977 to play Hawkwind and Magazine covers." Unquote.
That makes sense.
I knew you would like that.
Dude.
Yeah, doesn't it?
I love that. And yeah. It makes absolute sense.
Kind of had that spaciness of Hawkwind and that hypnotic element, but the more precise Magazine thing, right? Yeah. Yeah. No wonder we dig the track, but he goes
up. Boy Vaughn.
That guy, it is. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. The dude from Crispy Ambulance, Hemsall, he says that they also grew up loving, and get this, Todd Rundgren, Jethro Tull, Gong, Rush, Magma, and Throbbing Gristle. I think we should like that band.
Are they in my head?
Yeah. God. Look, motherfuckers. They're right behind you, dude.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's Crispy Ambulance.
Let's move on.
Jesus Christ.
That kind of blew us away. I wonder what this will do. This is a gentleman named Rupert Hine.
Oh.
In silence now I'm caught awake. At last he is alone. So to the spider, the web is home. I am the outsider, a night watchman with no eyes. I am the outsider, too late to break inside. Outsider, a night watchman with no eyes. I am the outsider, too late to break inside.
I think we're hitting an all-time high here at Radical Research of like discoveries during a show, because I'm kind of dying for more Crispy Ambulance.
Same.
Kind of dying for more of that.
Way more of that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about these things is the element of surprise, because when we started listening to this, both of us were kind of nonplussed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it turns into just pure revelation.
I know. It was a little like Crispy Ambulance for me, but I'd like that Rupert beginning less.
Woo.
Oh, and then man, it just fucking it takes it where it needs to go. And I even like the ending where he's going off on this like very listenable one note kind of drone-y sublime thing. Yeah, it's great. So that's Rupert Hine. That's the same guy that's listed on your Roll the Bones and Presto albums. Hold on. Here's what I'll say.
I hope you have one of them.
Presto.
At least.
We definitely endorse Presto here in this house. Roll the Bones less so. But here's the thing. He produced both of those. And I even read the Getty book. I tore through that Getty Lee, My Effin' Life book. Mm-hmm. And it's unbelievable. He goes into some depth on some albums. There was almost nothing on Presto. Probably the least talked about album in that book. Really? But what I wanted to find out was, like, why does it sound so brittle and awful?
That's how it sounds.
It's the only truly bad Rush production up to that point. You know?
That's how it's they were crushing it. Me. It sounds, yeah, fragile.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like you could break it.
Yes. Like a crispy exactly. little crack.
Yep.
Like a crispy little crack. Little
crispy ambulance. Like crispy little ambulance.
Crispy little ambulance. Would you crack that thing? Yeah. Crispy little ambulance.
I swear
to God, some kind of boy.
Presto, you better damn it. Presto, you better be careful. You're going to break yourself.
Oh, shit. Is this what our Southern live show does to us? To my point, I think you're just trying to delay me talking anything good about the Roll the Bones album. But here's what I'll say. The guy, Rupert Hine, that we just listened to, obviously an artist in his own right, Gabriel-esque, probably more about the idea than the instrumentation.
Sure.
However he can get there, and he gets there. Yep. So here's the thing. Presto is a great album, could have been a great album with better production, and you leave off a couple songs. We won't debate that now. Roll the Bones would have been a great EP and sounds great. Like, it's a really good sounding album. So what happened with Hine and or the band between the two? That's what I've always wondered. So, anyway.
I don't hate Roll the Bones. Like,
I know. You like Neurotica,
good
right?
Stuff.
Huh? Neurotica's great. Neurotica, Ghost of a Chance.
Neurotica, especially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, it's their worst album.
Oh, yeah. When I rank their albums, I put it. The lowest.
It would be the lowest for me too.
Same. Sorry, Marty. Not that Marty's listening to this.
Marty even gives a shit about anything that's happening right now.
He'd surprise you. He's certainly not all metal, but yeah, he doesn't like when we agree. And here we go agreeing again. A certain ratio. I had no knowledge of this band before this
concert. I did.
You did. Do tell.
Yeah. Simon Reynolds.
Oh, okay. The author.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The they're featured in his post-punk book.
Rip It Up and Start Again. Yeah, you either bought that for me or you...
I think I bought it for you.
You highly recommended it or something.
Yeah, I think I bought it for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I read it with great interest, man. That's an excellent book.
They're a minor mention in there.
Okay.
But I mostly know them from The Wire. The British magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you into them? Is it fair to say you're into Certain Ratio or you know about them?
Yeah, I have one of their albums.
And how many do they have?
Couldn't tell you.
You gotta get radical, man.
I'm not being radical right now.
So this one comes from an album called Sextet. So this came out in 1982. Really interesting song title, Knife Slits Water.
Bring it home with me. Yeah. So
Man, a lot of thoughts on that one.
Yeah. You know, oddly danceable.
Yep.
But you said alienating.
Yeah, it's really.
But it is.
It's kind of like it. It's, like the rhythm of it.
Yeah.
In opposition to the actual emotional melodic.
Totally. That's
delivery. Like, why is this sort of dancey, fun party aspect over here? And then why am I so creeped out, skeezed out,
yep.
like feeling not good about it? Like
you
feeling paranoid. That would
you said everything that I wanted to say.
Okay.
That's exactly how I felt. Just couldn't articulate it.
Gotcha.
But you're right. It's like you got fun here, and then you have like absolute fucking Orwellian fear on this side.
And I like it more every time I hear it, I think, but I still don't know what I think. And I'd like to hear more of their material.
No, odd.
Cause exactly. It's odd. It's like them or not, that band absolutely has their own sound.
Yep.
It's like,
yep.
Decroix. Like, totally. It's so totally. Like, it's so individualistic.
Yep.
So you just aren't going to mistake them for anybody else. So we give them props for that. Here's a band. I'm curious. We haven't talked about them much. Tears for Fears.
Oh, we haven't. So I know Don and John are super into Tears for Fears.
Don and John who?
Oh,
Don.
Yeah.
Both and, from Agalloch. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
And Ben Adler. Ben Mack.
Yes.
Yeah, super into
Tears for Fears. Yeah, he comes to mind sometimes when I think about
it. But I've never...
You've never dealt.
Taken the journey. No.
Do you like some of the
no, I only know songs. The one song.
Everybody Wants to Rule yep. the World.
And I like good. It quite a bit.
Exactly. Yeah, they're kind of one of those bands for me, too. They've always been like, I like the singles a lot. Just never delved. I did try once. I was house sitting in LA once, and the girl's house had a Tears for Fears CD. I put it on. It just didn't connect, but maybe it was the mood.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the time. It was like a good 12, 14 years ago.
Sure.
Whereas I've always liked Mad World. Is that the one from the Donnie Darko soundtrack? I love that song. And even in my Virginia days, I went through a period of like being kind of obsessed with that song.
What a film, too.
Yes, great movie. Love it. Love that film.
Mad World got me. How you found out about that? I found out about that movie through Dax.
Dax really? Riggs.
Yep.
Oh, wow. That was in the days where you're telling friends.
Sure.
Oh, hey, order this from Netflix and you get the DVD. You know what I mean? Like, I might have moved it up in my queue and got it, and we watched it then. But anyway, Tears for Fears. So they're included on this comp. It's a curious inclusion. Let's listen for the supposed progressiveness that kind of the foundation of this comp. Well, Ben, Don, John, we're going to follow you into the Tears for Fears road, I think. That was good. So that was from 1983's The Hurting. We're in 83. I think The Hurting is on my to get a physical copy list immediately. I'll start there. Because that song, Memories Fade, is really fantastic. All the highs with the vocal.
The synths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only other thing we need to say about Tears for Fears is that prog moment. There's that moment where the curtain opens. Yeah, totally. You're like, oh, that's why it's on this comp. You know, like, and that's, to me, that's the beauty of this comp. And I am going to give props to Stephen Wilson, the curator.
Sure.
Because holy shit, he really, first you got to have massive knowledge of this whole area to even try to do a comp like this. You know what I mean? Like the knowledge base is you know, his frame of references are nasty and humiliating, as somebody once said of us. But it's kind of the same thing. Like it's unbelievable. But he's pulling out all this stuff that truly does fit in the world of progressive music.
He's recasting a lot of what would be considered post-punk and showing you how progressive it is.
Absolutely.
Like pulling, you know, going from that one point to the other.
For sure.
And that's what's so special, I think.
A couple of interesting items from the liner notes in the Tears for Fears area. Kurt Smith from the band says that Peter Gabriel's third album, Melt, was probably the biggest influence on the recording.
It's perfect sense.
Kind of hear that, right?
Perfect.
Yeah, great album. And kind of that thing of like, that was a production or an ethic of like taking away. Like, we have all of this before us. Let's work on taking things away rather than adding. Kind of the Talking Heads ethic as well. But Roland Orbison says of this album, Memories Fade, that, quote, at the time, it was progressive electronic music. End quote. I mean, it's a simple thing. This is what we thought we were doing, was progressive electronic music. Fair enough.
That makes sense.
All this talk about like prog in alternative 80s music and otherwise. Here we go. We're huge Van de Graaff Generator fans.
Yes.
Also huge fans of tons of Peter Hamill's solo work. I own everything up to 83's Patience. Mm-hmm. And that's where Stephen pulls from. And it's really interesting because this is a really great song. I'm like, wow, I can't believe I'm going to get maybe buy another Hamill album, because I have some ones that are even later and that are, some are good, some are hit or miss. Some are bad.
Yeah, I don't go that far, but maybe I should.
Well, take a listen to this.
Why don't you take a listen to this, boy?
My boy, why don't you pull up a chair and get your ears out?
But there is a daddy. Others, the fear could not be worse. But nature's not your mother now, just your suckling nurse. And there isn't any doctor, there isn't any cure.
There's a guy, we often say that we don't love lyrics, or we don't delve into them, or they don't matter as much when everything else is great, right? But you know where I'm going. I can tell by the way you're agreeing with me.
Because everything you said, I was hanging on every single word.
Oh, yeah.
Every single word.
Especially when you come out of that after that kind of, you know, more sculptured, noisy guitar part thing. Like, yeah, he's commanding. I mean, Man, that blows us away. So there you go.
There is no doctor.
Waiting for the doctor to come.
Yeah, you're fucked.
The song is called Patient, as in a patient at a medical hospital, from an album called Patience, but not plural patient, just having patience.
Right.
Thank you, Peter Hamill, for being so fucking great.
Jeez.
I mean.
Fuck you, Peter Hamill.
Yeah.
For being so awesome.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is one you're going to have to bring me in on. Cocteau Twins. What do you know?
What do I not know?
I know.
Yeah, come on, man. For me, kind of the foundational 4AD band. Scottish group. Eventually got married.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yep. Then they brought in a bass player after the fact on their, I think their second EP.
Okay.
Is
he on what we're going to listen to? Because we're going to listen to something from Treasure.
Yes.
84.
Yep. Yeah, this is a really special record for me and just in general. I mean, like, this is sort of the, I think that the impulses that drove Dream Pop and Shoegaze were already in.
Okay. So Love Spirals Downwards had to be hugely into Cocteau.
Totally.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because totally. That was my entrance into Dream Pop way long ago, mid-90s.
Yep.
I haven't really checked out Cocteau Twins because everything I hear I like, but I've never been grabbed the way we've been grabbed by some tonight. Like, although I'm still very interested. I'm really interested.
I'll have to grab you because I obviously love this band.
Absolutely. Let's listen to the track Dynamo, not Domino.
Nope.
It's Dynamo?
Dynamo.
What's the story there?
With nonsense.
I think you should call Don Anderson Dynamo from now on.
I think I will.
Yo, Dynamo. Is he a Dynamo? Cocteau Twins fan?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds about right.
Dynamo.
That tracks. Hey, Dynamo.
So Dr. Dynamo.
Dr. Dynamo. Waiting for the doctor to come. We're back, and our minds may be altered in some way by this music.
Lorelei,
you're handing me your phone, and on the Treasure album, we listened to Dynamo, mm-hmm. and you're saying Lorelei is the one.
As Pete Steele's official biographer.
Oh,
and you are.
Yes, I guess. I guess technically,
the definitive biographer of Pete Steele,
the only biographer so far.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, so
for talking books.
But you'd still be the best.
Well, thanks.
But that song, pure typo negative.
Oh yeah. No, I can see Peter got into Dream Pop, but it's well documented. And you know, Lycia for one.
Yep.
Man, that's yeah.
How do you say
Lycia? I don't know.
So I've heard it two different ways. Because I'm a fan.
Yeah.
So I've heard it Lycia and I've heard it Lycia.
It's probably Lisha.
Yeah, I don't know. Listeners, if you know, let us know and then let the music do the talk.
Yeah, right. Let's get back to Cocteau Twins for a second. I like the idea of how they fit into the whole dream pop world because they're still new to me. But man, when she brings up that vocal there, and that's a moment. That is a serious moment. And talk about layers and psychedelia with layers. And as we discussed last episode, especially layers on something like that Cynic track we featured on episode 116, it was like this web. I guess it's a web type of audio experience, right? Cocteau Twins creates this very particular web. That's great stuff. Moving on, this next one was completely unknown to me. I'm sure it was completely unknown to you too. Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Mr. Drake.
Never.
And if you know Cardiacs, you know Tim Smith, and he is the Mr. Smith in the name, as is two conspirators with him, Mrs. Smith and Mr. Drake, who are also have some Cardiacs links, of course. So this is a Cardiac side project. This is a thrilling prospect because this is a band that I recently got into along with you. I think we discovered them a little late too,
We
and
did.
I kept working on it, and man, when it clicks.
No idea until this.
Yeah, we did. It was Ben Simpkins who sent us an idea for a snippet on that Rush show. We were doing things that sound a lot like Rush, and there was that permanent wavesy type bit from a Cardiac song. Anyhow, this is really interesting. I can't wait to hear what you think of this because obviously if it's Cardiacs related, it's pretty high top tier stuff. This is a song called In the Waiting Room. It's only 1 minute and 30 seconds long, and this was a very short-lived band. I think they might have done a cassette release, and that was it. 1 minute and 30 seconds. Let's do this.
Half the time I can't decide my
So we are just beside ourselves here because we are making a lot of discoveries. I don't know if it's because we're just like feeling good and we're together and it's a lot of fun, but there's a lot of discoveries tonight here.
Agreed.
Crispy Ambulance, the Rupert Hine, others. This one is great, and that is so. We were listening to it, and I said it's like old crusty Decca Records Caravan album.
Yeah, I mean, it's a throwback. Like, it's just very prog.
It's super prog, and that nice Mellotron-esque sound at the end that squeezes in there, it's just beautiful. Yeah, and again, Stephen Wilson really like understanding like what his mission is here. That's a perfect distillation of what Intrigue is. And they're not paying us to do this, but I hope people go out and buy it. I know that when we did the first episode, the first installment, season one, a few people told us that, oh, I went and bought the comp. And this is not, it's like $60 for the four CD thing. And I'm gonna guess more for the vinyl, which is like seven records or some shit. I think. I don't know.
Well, yeah, he did it right.
We're gonna move to something decidedly less awesome. I don't love this, but I'm a huge Trevor Horn fan in the sense of that guy, I think, is one of the greatest assets to music ever. The few things he's done that I love, I think are tremendous. That's the thing. You know what I mean? Yes, drama.
Favorite.
90125.
Well, drama is probably my favorite Yes record.
I'm
I
with you,
mean,
people. It's not mine, but it's probably it's like two or three. So and then I love the first two and only two Buggles records. I think they should absolutely be on Intrigue. They're not, but that's one of those I'll bring up next episode
Yep.
in a little more detail. But like, yeah, I think they're phenomenal. And I just, even Yes's Fly From Here from a production standpoint is fantastic. I just think he's great. What are your thoughts on Horn? Like, do you,
Oh, I love him.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just a genius producer. His songwriting ability or his ability to guide a band into new places. And that's so evident with Yes. Because they, on Drama especially, like, you know, they're clearly Yes.
Yeah.
The players are still the same.
Yeah.
He just redirects them.
It's pretty brilliant. And
yeah,
again, you know, if you listen to stuff from the second Buggles album, you can see that's a very prog influenced synth pop slash new wave slash art rock album. And they absolutely fall squarely in art rock too.
Yep.
I just don't like him in much other things because I don't know. I mean, like, are you familiar with Art of Noise, the next band? No, you know about them.
Of course.
I'm sure. Yeah. You read The Wire. I mean, like,
yeah,
I'm sure they've gotten mentioned there before.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. This is Art of Noise is Close to the Edit. And yes, that's actually a Close to the Edge reference. These guys played a lot with their music. Like, that's a reworking of a thing called Beatbox, apparently. I'm not an Art of Noise expert by any means, and I will probably continue to not be. That apparently sampled Yes's Owner of a Lonely Heart and Leave It, according to the booklet, but I don't hear that. Do you? Did you hear?
No.
I heard that little stab that sounded like Owner, but it doesn't really matter. I think it fits on this comp, but you seem to have misgivings about it. Not just because you don't like it, but you don't think it maybe...
I think it's way too 80s pop.
You didn't hear the progressive sounds in it.
Well, I hear the mashup.
Sure.
Or maybe an attempt at pastiche.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well, that was their thing. I mean, that was they would cut up all their music and
But it still sounds like it's aspiring for something else.
Okay.
To something else.
I'm with you. I think we're a little bit meh. Art of Noise.
Yeah.
Hats off to Trevor Horn. We're not wearing hats, but if we were, we would take them off and salute Trevor Horn.
And you know what, Marty? We dislike something and we still agree.
Disagreement is agreement. Let's move on. Dolly's Car. Let's talk. Let me hear your journey with this band.
God almighty. Well, thank you, Jeff.
Right.
Yep. Jeff came down, brought this album. I had no idea about it, despite being a huge Peter Murphy fan.
Right.
And a huge Mick Karn fan.
Right. From Bauhaus of Japan, respectively.
Yeah, Bauhaus, Japan, yep. David Sylvian.
Of course.
Tones on Tail.
Yep.
But
hell of a pedigree, but somehow this album eluded you all these years.
Totally eluded me.
And I'm a Japan fan from about 12 years back. I love Japan, and I'm a more recent convert to Bauhaus. Mm-hmm. But I was into them before I got sure. the Intrigue about a year ago. Also, just not a name I came across. Plus, like Dali is like anybody that appreciates awesome surrealistic art, big fan. So I don't think I'd forget a band name, especially right. one that was associated with sure. Japan about Bauhaus.
Yeah, so either.
How did
either.
This get biased? I don't know. It was actually released in, what is it, 84, 85? This is an 84 album, The Waking Hour. Yep. It was the one and only full length they ever did. They got back together much later.
2012?
Something like that. Yeah, put out an unfinished thing that's now serves as an EP because it was right before Karn's death.
Oh yeah.
So okay. Anyhow, it's good, but this album slays. Is just so good for what it's doing and so unique.
Blew me away.
Yeah. Well, let's take a listen and we'll talk after this.
Arm in arm in an avenue wide and tall, tall buck buildings telling tales. It's a spring or fall. Time is waiting on the floor. Go grab it from whom? My friend is clawing at the dial. It tells us 2:30. Opened up, I leave my friend no fear. The jacket man with piercing suit is looking for a tear. He jerks his words in monotone hum and draws a picture clear of Dolly's car, his silent cell.
Nice to hear that again.
Yes.
It was a great listen a few days ago. I've been revolving around this one for a few months.
Yep.
It's just fantastic. So thanks, Intrigue. This, they don't have as much out that I've explored as Associates, but this is a similar obsession, like
right.
with like something I discovered through Intrigue.
Yeah.
Like I went crazy for this the way I did Associates. I hold those bands in the highest esteem. And this is Mick Karn's thing. Like Peter Murphy's excellent on it. I think we hear that
sure.
throughout that. But Mick Karn, other than the drum programming, which is done by a guy named Paul Vincent Lawford, Mick Karn does everything. Mick Karn does everything. Yeah. And as you get into the album, you hear all the layering, you hear all the instrumentation, you hear all the different things. And of course, that loopy ass bass all throughout.
Yep.
It's his masterpiece. Mm. And it seems to be pretty cult, but man, I'm going to evangelize for it forever.
Same.
You talk about layers and psychedelia. Here we go. I want to mention their name first, Dali's Car, before we move on to Scott Walker. Their name comes from a 1938 Dali three-dimensional piece of art called Rainy Taxi. That's interesting to me because you may remember that Porcupine Tree on Staircase Infinities has a song called Rainy
yep.
Taxi.
Yep.
I think you're familiar with that EP.
I am.
The early
yeah.
Up the Downstairs.
I am.
That piece of art also went by the title of Mannequin Rotting in a Taxi Cab. Fantastic. Carter just needs to write a song called that.
Agreed.
Yeah, right. So, man, hail Dali, hail Peter Murphy, hail Mick Karn. There's a lot of good stuff going on with this release. Even the cover rule.
Hail like, Carcass.
The gatefold cover. Hail Carcass. When's the Carcass show coming up?
Soon.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
What would the angle be? We'll figure it out. The last two songs on each Carcass album.
Okay, perfect.
Since they ended the album so well, right?
That's an angle. Yeah.
Okay, that's an angle. So yeah, let's move on to Scott Walker. I hand the microphone over to you because I have familiarity with Tilt. I haven't delved much beyond that, although I find all of it fascinating, and it ranges from off-putting to godly. You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of.
Yeah, I get that.
You get that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. Okay. I love it all.
You love Climate of Hunter because it's the only album title that has Hunter in the, well, that you like. Any other album titles with Hunter in the name? I'm trying to think. Hunter.
I don't think so.
That's a 0.5. When we get really desperate, that's a 0.5.
Yeah, I love all Scott Walker. Love the first four. Well, not all of it.
Walker Brothers.
Yeah, 60s. No Walker Brothers. But then the reunion stuff in the 70s when he was like drinking way too heavily. And
was that also Walker Brothers? Was that
some? Yeah, it was some Scott Walker and some Walker Brothers too.
Because he had a gap there of what are considered his good albums.
Yeah, I mean, so his last great album was Scott Four, that was 69. And then Climate of Hunter was 84. So it's a good long while in there.
Okay. You
know, 15 years.
And just the shifts he went through. I mean, he worked with Sun.
Yeah.
I mean, like the guy went into this wildly artistic experimental music world. I mean, it's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's hard to get your head around.
Well, I tell you,
it's amazing.
Listeners, if you are interested in the works of Scott Walker, the next issue of Deserts of Hex will be available shortly and features an entire piece on Scott Walker.
Deserts of Hex. Oh. Deserts of Hex. Come on to the newsstand and get your Deserts of Hex.
Deserts of Hex. Okay. Deserts of Hex.
Yeah, we're working on the theme song for Deserts of Hex Part 2. It'll be on radicalresearch.org. Okay, we're getting a little loopy here, but let's get back to Scott Walker. Rawhide from Climate of Hunter, 1984. Good choice?
Yes.
To begin, shutting down here. Shutting down here. Where next leave the air unpossessed, giant heads like constellation, a last grain of dust lands in the darkness on tongues laid bare and turns charred, shutting down here, freezing in red, bent over his eyes. Insomniac nods in the honor. He is glazed in the hooves all around. It is losing its shape. Losing its shape. As the heat in your hand carve the muscle away. And he grins from a break in a backlash. Delivers it up on a break in a backlash. Motionless brands burn into a hip frame as a savior load sidelines, backlit by fire on the ridges of the highest freeway.
Can't say how much I love that or don't yet, but I will say that the ending I love. It's very specific in what it reminds me of. So if I say lush as fuck, what does that mean to you?
Tony Banks.
What era?
78.
That's why I love you, brother. I just had to fist bump you because yes. I got Burning Rope written here. That's song for the album.
Yep.
Yeah. And then there were three. Yeah, no, you get it. But doesn't it have that luscious
watch,
Tony Banks thing?
It does.
Yeah, exactly. And I think
when it goes from so confrontational almost to so just
finds its wings.
Yeah.
It's that ascension.
So giving.
It's funny because Scott Walker's name comes up in this booklet. Even in the listening throughout Intrigue. And it's not as much as Brian Eno and David Bowie. I think these are the two names that come up the most.
Right.
Then we have maybe under that Peter Hamill and definitely Scott Walker. So it's funny that he ends up here because it was just one of his many, many phases. And sure. He lands here for a little bit.
Yep.
But what was the audience for that in 1984? Like, who was listening to this?
I can't imagine.
Seems so out of time.
And you think the chance that the label took on him. He was this, you know, sort of antique, you know, 60s crooner.
Yeah.
Even though he did some very daring things then. But that's what most people remembered him as. And then he comes back in 1984 and puts this out.
Right. Right. Like, and how varied is the album compared to what we heard?
Oh, very. It's pretty has a continuity about it.
Okay.
Unlike Drift and certainly Tilt.
Ah, his later albums. Okay.
Yeah. Which don't. I think compared to those, fairly accessible.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And the only other thing I needed to say about Walker before we move on is that the guy, I can't remember his name right now, the singer for the Associates. Must love Scott Walker. Because listen to Scott Walker.
Oh, my Walker God. Here. But early Scott Walker.
I guess so, because
his God.
Yeah. And the guy from Associates was actually singing like Scott was there, but a few years before it. There's simpatico anyway.
Billy McKenzie.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to re-say it.
But
thanks for looking it up.
Sure. Yeah. It bothered me.
It did. But I should know that name, Billy McKenzie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Me too.
He's amazing. So from one kind of solo-y type artist to another solo-y type artist that you love in both cases. And I think these guys have kind of almost equal stature in your world. You tell me, David Sylvian. Mm. You know, I mean, I know you are a huge fan.
They're both very, very. One of my favorite songs of all time is by David Sylvian.
I remember one episode you said that it was your favorite. So like you were willing to die on that hill.
I would.
Which is
That's my favorite. It's my favorite song. If I had to pick one, that would be the last song I ever heard.
Man, I can do that with bands. We don't want to go down this rabbit hole. Mm-mm. I'm sure listeners don't want us to either. But that makes me wonder what my number one is.
Not in the habit of doing that either.
What does it say about me that the first one that comes to mind is, this is one of my favorite songs of absolute all time, but the first one that just came to mind in this discussion was the 1978 Paul Stanley song, not a Kiss song, but from a solo album. And you're laughing and you shouldn't be. Take Me Away Together as One. That thing, you've never heard that?
No.
How have I never played that for you?
I've never heard.
You have a love of Kiss in terms of certain albums and eras, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've never listened to that?
Never heard it.
Wow. Well, you know what's weird? I've never heard your favorite song. That's a .5.
Oh,
if we want to desecrate such special songs to snippet form, might have to just be a discussion.
Okay.
Hey, Jason Walton.
Dude, he said we were in a car one time driving somewhere. He was like, he said liking Kiss is unconscionable.
Yeah, him and Ken Golden. Ken Golden will tell you the same thing.
Jason, I love you so much. You know that. I love how passionately Jason
hates
and loves.
I know. Well, I guess that says a lot about him.
It's both.
Big heart, big hate.
Dude, big heart, big
heart, big hate. Jason Walton coming right to you.
Montana. God damn.
Montana. Well, moving on to the second Japan adjacent artist on the CD, David Sylvian. Yeah, as you said, you're a pretty big fan. Is this a good choice? Let's start there. Is this a good choice? Brilliant Trees from the album of the same name.
Sure.
Do you think all of his stuff, I'll say, is too subdued for this? It's almost so, but I guess the progressive angle is what it needs to be.
It's incredibly artful. It's super creative.
I'm not saying that.
Even though it's subdued.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a good choice.
Okay.
I wouldn't have picked anything off this album.
Interesting. What would you have gone with?
Gone to Earth or Secrets of the Beehive.
I have both of those.
Yep.
I don't know Brilliant Trees, but
that's the first one.
Been on my list.
And it's more Japan-y.
Okay. That sells it right there.
Yeah.
Say no more. I don't love this track too much. I think it's okay. And I like the other two solo albums that you mentioned, Beehive and Gone to Earth. What I find about him, though, it's like the one little thing that bugs me is sometimes like it's all a little too perfect. Mm. It's all just a little too curated and a little too manicured. Like everything. And I love that kind of stuff. Queensryche is one of the fussiest bands in the world, and I love them for it because that's what makes them Queensryche. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying, right?
Love that.
Bands like that are fussiest. Just, yeah, they're you know what I mean, though?
Yeah,
they're,
sure.
They're all about...
So what bugs it?
Just, there's something that's so, like, it's like I said, it's all a little too pretty. It's all so sewed up that it's just a little, got a tight little butthole. Whereas, you know, it needs to kind of chill out a little more. It needs some air, needs to breathe. Like,
yet,
it's some of the most beautiful music I know. And some of it is exciting and adventurous and thrilling. I mean, you know what I mean? Like he's experimental too. So I like it. I'm just not as 100% on these than you. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. You don't care. You got the albums.
I don't give a shit.
There you stand, making my life possible. Raise my hands up to heaven, but only you could know my whole world stands in front of me by the look in your eyes, by the look in
So we were talking as we listened how that didn't seem like the right choice, and definitely you know, with your education on this album. But then it goes there and then it justifies itself. Yeah, yeah, that was a nice turn.
Now, there's always some surprising stuff with Sylvian.
Yeah.
He's like a Peter Gabriel, or a Peter Hamill. You know, somebody, I mean, always got some element of surprise or, you know.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a reason he's highly thought of by people like Robert Fripp.
And Hunter Ginn.
Of Deserts of Hex. Co-editor of Deserts of Hex.
Of Deserts of Hex, babe.
Well, we're going to set up a newsstand out here in your driveway. Sell them.
Come on,
get some lemonade in the Deserts of Hex.
Yep.
Number two. 12-page interview with John McEntee of Incantation.
Incantation.
Immolation.
Suffocation.
Mortation. Let's move on. We're getting delirious here. We got more pizza bones to eat. Propaganda, Dream Within a Dream. You knew nothing about this. Okay, so this is interesting because we started on a pretty rough foot with 12th Night. We're going to end in a way that isn't as gross, but it's just boring. And I hate to end a show with a boring track, but we're committed to our work, whatever we're trying to do here.
Yep.
So we got to give this one fair time. I'm curious what you think about it. I was a little surprised you hadn't heard it because as I've listened to this comp a little bit in the last few months, this sounds like something you would like, and maybe you will. There've been a lot of surprises. The bar's pretty high right now on the final song. So
talk about the next episode. That something's boring. Sorry. And then you said, it sounds like something you would like, Hunter.
No.
Well, like boring music, Jeff?
No, I didn't mean it that way. That would be a really childish way of me to critique any sort of music, especially one of my very, very best friends. That's boring, but fucking
it's boring, but I bet you'll like it.
No, it just it just seems more up. It's one of these things that even though we don't always agree with musically, we can look through each other's collections and go, yeah, no, or I just don't know, right? This one is like, yeah, not down my alley, but maybe up yours.
Okay.
And that's all I mean by that.
All right.
And plus you're a simpleton, and I don't think you can handle anything beyond propaganda anymore.
Can't.
All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream.
So that's Propaganda, Dream Within a Dream, and yep, Edgar Allan Poe. Thoughts?
Not impressed.
And I was telling you, because you were unfamiliar, I was telling you that on the Intrigue album, of course, we're only playing snippets. We only ever play snippets. What's weird is on Intrigue, Stephen Wilson gives that the full 9 minutes. It's a 9-minute song. And the reason I got turned off by it was not only because it's like what we just heard and we don't like it, but it keeps going on. It just does. It's one of those long songs that does not justify its length.
Yeah.
I mean, they're out there, right?
So we're,
that is an episode too, because that would be fun, because there are some, we were talking about Ulver's Wars of the Roses, the last song in there that does not justify its length.
No, it does not at all.
Propaganda vocalist Claudia Bruchen says in the booklet, "We've always wanted to build up the image of ABBA in hell." What do you think there? Is that actually like...
Sounds nice.
Join us next time for episode 118. We are going to survey at least 5, maybe 6 albums in the metal sphere that are one song long. That includes Fate's Warnings, A Pleasant Shade of Grey, mm-hmm. Reincarnations, Light of Day, Day of Darkness, Renaissance's The Death of Art, mm-hmm. Edge of Sanity's Crimson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not Crimson 2.
Nope. Certainly not that.
No. And Love You Dance. What was the 5th one? Oh, Sabbath from Japan. Mm-hmm. The Dwelling.
Awesome.
Yeah. We'll see you for that. Can't wait to dig into that. Enjoy the point fives. Thanks for hanging in. Love you, Hunter. It's great to see you.
Love you.
Good night.